Last week I wasn't here because I went over to Sydney to teach at a conference called Mind and Its Potential, and talking about a lot of the mindfulness and meditation techniques and the various forms of Buddhism, and just how powerful that has become in our world, and how it's affecting many, many parts of our society, especially people who are into psychology, psychiatry, medicine, business, even government. There we go. Isn't that beautiful sound to accompany the talk? And part of the talk, I was actually mentioning that how popular meditation has become, you know, in the Western world, and that's one of the reasons why. Even here we're building our meditation retreat centre. We've got our building permission now, so we'll be starting very soon to construct this. And when some people ask, well, why are you spending all this money just building retreat centres for meditation? It's there to serve a need, but it's also to change the world. Because sometimes people don't realise that the patron for our retreat centre is the former Premier of Western Australia, Dr. Jeff Gallop. You know, who, because of his depression, he used meditation. He came to our monastery down at Serpentine on the quiet, just without telling anybody. And to actually learn a bit of meditation, to use what he calls Eastern philosophy, basically Buddhism, to help with his depression. So he was so grateful for the help he received that he became our patron. And this is the start of changing the world. Because you all know that Dr. Gallup's best friend, the person for whom he was the best man at their marriage, was Tony Blair. And Tony Blair's best friend is George Bush. I know that Mr. Bush has only got maybe a year and a half left, so I'm really rushing to build a retreat centre soon. Because with Jeff Gallup as our patron, sure he'll invite his friend. He's got a lot of time left on his hand now, Tony Blair. And Tony Blair can get George Bush to come to our retreat centre down at Serpentine. And then, true, we'd have changed the world. Okay, it might be a bit loud. I'm trying to push it through. I was trying to push it through our council because this is important. This is changing the world. But it took a long time giving the building license. But anyhow, you can see that meditation actually does have a huge impact. And being serious, that people were seeing that impact. There was there's a huge number of studies which have been printed in journals, you know, throughout the world in different disciplines, and just showing just how that the meditation which is practiced here and other places, it does sort of increase your attention, basically wakens you up so you see more, and allows you to regulate your emotions and moods, and creates huge benefits in many, many samples of people. No benefits of like some more compassion and just some more ability to socially interact with other people. Which is why it's so important that Mr. Bush learns this so she can socially interact with the President of Iran and with the people in Iraq. And maybe, who knows, have a bit more interaction with Osama bin Laden. Maybe we can save the world after all. Because it actually studies have shown this. And interestingly, just the anecdotal experience which I've had, you know, 25 years now here in Western Australia. One of the people who learned meditation with me, she was a deputy principal of one of the schools, primary schools. She's retired about 10 years ago now. So it shows you how old this story is. But she would be teaching meditation in her class of kids. And they were year sixes, grade sixes. And, you know, grade sixes, you know, they're starting to, you know, get close to puberty and starting to be a bit troublesome. But she started teaching the meditation from the very beginning of the year. You know, she called it quiet time rather than meditation. Because, you know, meditation is looked upon as being Buddhist, and for a good reason, because basically Buddhism invented meditation. You know, we started it off. So it has that association, even though that, you know, anyone can meditate, you don't have to be a Buddhist to meditate. And, you know, even some people say that when they sit down meditating at home, their dogs meditate too. Which is one of the other nice areas. They sit quietly next to you. And I'm sure that people who meditate next to their dogs bark less and they're much quieter. Maybe that could be a study on how to quiet down dogs. But she was teaching quiet time, starting off with 5 minutes at the beginning of the year, and finishing off with 15 or 20 minutes as a group activity, which started every morning of the school year. And she told me, actually it wasn't her, but it was her principal. Because I remember going to the school once and obviously having some tea with the principal. And he was not a Buddhist, but he was praising sort of this lady and how that her meditation introduced in this year sixes the changes which he saw happen. Which was not just the children's intellectual ability increased because their attention was strengthened, but also their academic results increased. And he could see this, having been a principal, looking at it from an objective position. But also he found out some other things which were happening, that the social interaction of the children in that class improved. They were more sensitive, more compassionate, and less aggressive towards each other, which was an important part of what happens when you do become more attentive, more sensitive. Just the mindfulness develops the compassion and the understanding. And I remember her giving an example of what happened many, many times. She said that sometimes in the class of kids in our modern schools, sometimes there'd be some sort of argument or some sort of altercation. And usually where that would be a fight or a big argument, now that one of the kids in the class would put up their hand and say, "Miss, can we have quiet time now?" And when they had quiet time, just for 5 minutes, just doing a simple relaxation, watching the breath, calming the mind down, afterwards the altercation finished and there was no sort of big argument or big problem. Not only that, but people were sensitive to each other because of their digital development of meditation. Year sixes, they could actually tell when somebody was in a bad mood or someone was sick or someone was unhappy. And because of that, they had this beautiful little mini society in their classroom, which had been enhanced by doing a tiny bit of meditation every day. Now those are sorts of examples which, you know, professors from Stanford and from other universities over in the United States, and a professor here from Western Australia, the professor of Bodhinyana Monastery down in Serpentine, we all sort of started talking about just the results which we've seen from meditation. Simply that they're very well tested and proved. And one of the nice things about it is that, you know, it doesn't depend upon any chemicals you have to ingest. And so it's very cheap and very safe and has very quick and very long-lasting results in a human being. So that's why one of the reasons that meditation is an important growth area in our modern societies. And sometimes, you know, we think that many people come up and tell us their problems, or the problems of a husband and wife living together, or with their kids, or in schools, or with governments, or with business. And so this is a powerful little tool which we can spread out into this world, actually to help the well-being, the health, and the emotional sensitivity and compassion of our world. And it is powerful, and it does work. And it's a very, very strong thing. But you have to know how to do it properly. Because many times when we do our meditation, sometimes that the buzzword in many places these days is mindfulness. And sometimes that mindfulness, as some of the presenters at the conference mentioned, is a word which is overused. And because it becomes a slogan, many people don't understand what it really is. And I was actually quite surprised that many of the teachers said, yeah, we know that mindfulness works, but actually we can't meditate. They're unable to do that meditation, even though that they've been showing what happens with other people who do learn basic meditation. I think one of the problems is that the meditation becomes just too hard. One of the stories they told, which was quite fascinating, they were doing some research, and when you do research on meditation, it's a scientific study, so you have to have a control group. You get some people meditating, some people not meditating, and some people doing something else. And so the professor at Stanford, he got some people who were doing meditation for one day, some people doing nothing, and the third control group, they sent at the university's expense to a spa for the day. And what they found, actually, the people who went to the spa were far more relaxed than the people who did meditation all day. Which actually tells me there's something wrong with that meditation technique you're doing. Or maybe it's because the university paid for the spa and you didn't. But also I think that they were mentioning that the effects of meditation are far more long-lasting than just going to a spa. But when I heard that, I said, why is going to a spa make you relaxed? A lot of time it's because when you go into a spa, I've never been to a spa, so I'm just speculating here, and that's honest truth. That when you go to a spa, I don't know if you're in sort of a jacuzzi or hot water or being massaged or something, have you ever noticed whenever you're being massaged, you're feeling sensations in your body in this moment. It grounds you in your body, it grounds you in this moment. It's a pleasurable experience, so you don't want to wander off into thinking what's going to happen later on, because you're enjoying this moment. And that, to me, is the most important part of like learning how to sort of focus, to bring joy, peace, contentment into this moment. Otherwise, you know, we're not really mindful. We can be doing a meditation. Sometimes people do that. They can be sitting here and just thinking all sorts of things and wandering all over the place. And of course, there's no results to be gained from that type of quiet time because you're busy inside, you're noisy inside. You know, which is why that when we talk about something like mindfulness, the biggest thing is, yes, mindfulness does work, but how do we become mindful? And how do we actually grow that mindfulness? And our biggest mistake is actually trying to think that you have to make the mind mindful. You will work it as an act of will. And because in our Western world, we've got into this habit of thinking whatever we want, we have to work for it. We have to achieve it as a result of our own efforts. And I think this is one of the biggest problems in our Western world, is actually we work too hard. We do too much. And it's become such a habit inside of us, you know, to go for things, to work for things, to strive for things. And we think the only people who are really successful people in this world are the ones who are the hard workers. Understanding that this is not how meditation works. You can see where hard work gets us. We work so much we become crazy. And we sort of become psychotic. If not fully psychotic, just to, you know, a big degree of dysfunctional mental states, we're out of control sometimes. We get angry at ourselves, we get angry at other people, we get depressed when things go wrong. I've often speculated that the cause of depression is because we try so hard, we try to control, and when we try and control, eventually we come across the barrier, things which we can't change, we get frustrated. Control leads eventually to frustration, and frustration leads to anger. And the anger just consumes so much of our energy, it depresses us, that we do go into those negative states of mind. Or actually we just lose our energy, our commitments, lose our joy of life. Simply because that we just control too much. And very often that people actually go into their meditation. Okay, watch the breath. And they sit there with their clenched teeth, they're trying to watch every breath. And of course, if they do that, it'd be much better that you were in a spa. But instead of doing things like that, just understand that, you know, to be actually mindful, it means actually to be still, to be gentle. It's just this awareness is a natural state of mind. You remember when you were kids? Well, you were always mindful when you were children. You can actually often see children. They can actually sit and play with simple things. I'm talking about before they can become computer literate and play video games. Sometimes a little sort of pebble on the beach is all they need to be keep themselves happy for hours. Simply because we're not working so hard, we become far more alert and far more aware. So, you know, we do need these quiet times, times when we do very little. If we can actually stop and really rest, not just our body, but rest our minds. And then actually we can actually break through and actually become more alert, more awake, more mindful. And the key story is that the faster you go, the less you see. And because we move so fast doing many things, when we actually try and control and do things, what we're actually doing is trying to move off into something in the future. rather than stopping, being still and seeing what's going on right now. That's why we make too many mistakes. One of the stories which I've been telling the last few days, of this poor person who got so depressed because he used to be a painter and he was involved in a tragic accident and he lost his arm, had to be amputated. And you know, when you have like a loss of one of your limbs, that sometimes that does create a huge amount of depression in you. Especially because that was his love and his career to be painting, though he didn't have an arm. One day he got so depressed, he went to the CBD, climbed one of the office towers and got out on the ledge and was about to jump off to commit suicide. And that's when he saw, just down on the street, over in St. George's Terrace, this fellow with no arms, skipping down the street, and laughing, and dancing for joy. It's one of those occasions you think, wow, now here am I being depressed, I've only got one arm. And here's the guy who's got no arms at all, and look how happy he is. And of course that changed his whole life. He didn't want to commit suicide anymore, but he ran down the stairs quickly and caught up with that guy with no arms to ask him what his secret was. How can you be so happy, dancing for joy when you've got no arms? And the guy told him, I'm not happy, I'm dancing just because I'm trying to scratch my bum. So that's this evening's joke. If he was more mindful, a little, he might have actually seen what was going on instead of jumping to conclusions. But anyway, that's a little funny story, just by the way. But it's true that sort of sometimes when we can actually stop, we become more alert and more awake, and actually that's how we sort of jump for joy. Which is why that mindfulness, this beautiful quality of the mind, which is, you know, trumpeted in therapy as being incredibly powerful, as a way of like extending your attention and also regulating some of the negative emotions, and be able to do that old self-cognitive therapy to get rid of the anger, the depression, the guilt, and all those other things which cripple a person's happiness. So actually, to get that mindfulness started, it does take a lot of stillness, time out, resting. This is why that, you know, my favourite saying in the last few year or two has been, never do today what you can put off until tomorrow, because you might die tonight. Now that's an important saying, it's not just a joke. Because why is it that we just work so hard getting everything out of the way and doing things, and we never have actually time just to rest and be still and be peaceful and be calm? And when you actually understand the power of calm and stillness is taking time out, you find your awareness does start to generate, you do become more mindful, but also with that mindfulness coming from stillness, you actually do get more happiness. And so one of the things which, you know, I discovered as a meditator, the more still you get, the more joy you get. Strange thing. It's as if that, and this is an old spiritual truth, you have all the happiness and joy you want, but you leave it alone when you run off looking for something else. And because we've always been running off, we forgot what we've already had right here, right now, in this moment. It is a powerful thing just to come home. And if one stops, just pauses a while, and pauses many whiles, then you find that the mind starts to wake up. And when it wakes up, it becomes more aware. When it becomes more aware, it becomes happier. If you don't believe me, why is it that many people in our society, the first thing they do when they wake up, well, maybe not the very first thing, but you know, one of the first things they do, is put the kettle on and make themselves a cup of coffee. I know that some people in this world, they're not worth talking to until they've had their first cup of coffee. And if you know someone like that, why is that the case? It's because when they got the energy, they are much happier and more positive towards their partners and also towards themselves. And I've noticed that, and you can actually see why. It's because that energy of the mind is the happiness. Mental energy is happiness. I understand that very important point, and you can test it out for yourself. It's common sense, but sometimes we forget it. We understand, you know, why is there no happiness? Why is there no awareness of mindfulness? It's because we're dull. We don't have mental energy. We are burnt out, worn out, just almost half dead, our mind. And how on earth can you think you can get more energy in your mind by doing more things? We're already tired. Fortunately, these days, we know how to rest the body. And we can go to spas to rest the body. We can go to the beach to rest the body. We can just lay in the armchair to rest the body. The most important thing is learning how to rest your mind. To keep the mind calm for a few minutes. So it can regenerate its energies. That's the whole point of doing some meditation. To stop long enough to pause in this moment, to pause in silence, just to watch one thing rather than doing too many things at once. To slow down. And as you slow down, the mind starts to wake up. And as it wakes up, it gets more peace. More peace means more awareness. More awareness means more happiness. That's basically just how this whole thing works. And when you get more happiness and more peace, the whole point of meditation becomes a thing you love doing, you want to do, simply because it's fun. I've been a monk now for 33 years, over 33 years now. And the only reason I stay as a monk is because it's fun to meditate. And even though I have lots of work to do, sometimes I just love just sitting still and doing nothing, simply because I get a lot of happiness and joy out of this. And this is a marvelous thing to understand. When we understand that we can actually get this happiness and joy from being still, and that happiness and joy and that stillness gives rise to this awareness, we understand that how we can not so much control our life, but say like regulate our life. It's not much control, it's like saying no to some of the stupid things which we do in life. Some of our stupid habits. Because once you generate mindfulness, you know, from stillness, and it's accompanied with joy, you become more aware and more alert, you start to sort of see some of the stupid things which we do. Especially some of the stupid things which we think. And some of the things which you think, I know that sometimes people ask, you know, can monks read minds? And even if I could, it's the last thing I would do to read your minds. It's like reading a junk novel. Gee. Who would want to read your mind? Come on. Because there's so much rubbish in there. You know, talk about pulp fiction. You know, it's not even up to that stage. But anyhow, because there's so much junk in that mind, now, no wonder you get tired and you get stressed and you get angry and you get guilty and you feel fear and all these other negative emotions. Wouldn't it be a wonderful thing? Just like you have spring cleaning sometimes, you know, in your house you've got so much junk in the cupboards, sometimes on the weekend, well, let's clear it all out, there's going to be a council collection this weekend, get rid of all your junk. Wouldn't it be a wonderful thing to have a council collection of the junk in your mind? And fortunately you're in the right place. And next week we're having a retreat, there's a weekend retreat this weekend, so if you didn't make it to this weekend, come to the next retreat. If you don't make it for the next retreat, come to the next one. And it's like a rubbish collection organized by the Buddhist Society of all your unwanted goods in your mind. Please bring all that rubbish and dump it in the retreat centers. Wouldn't it be a wonderful thing to do that? So you have much more freedom in your head, between your ears. And this is actually how meditation does work, how the mindfulness actually just empties out things. Because you see, there's so much useless stuff we have. So many useless fears and worries. I don't know what you're worried about, what you're afraid of. But everything, every time that, you know, I've started being afraid of something, it never happens. You know, I remember here in Perth many years ago, there was a locust plague. And I remember in the West Australia, you used to get those newspapers, and it reached, I think, somewhere like in Geraldton. And it was coming to Perth. And the next day, it was 20 kilometres closer. And the next day, and they say it's going to be coming in 2 days' time. And the next day, we've got the paper, it's coming tomorrow. Nothing happened. It was a complete sort of wind-up. Because I think, you know, the locals, whatever, they decided to go somewhere else. They didn't like Perth, I don't know why. But whatever it was a complete build-up of fear. And too much of what we're afraid of is because of the fear, because of the worry. This is actually what harms our happiness and cripples our ability to respond appropriately. And very often what happens with fear is what you're afraid of you actually make happen. Strange thing, but this is what fear does. We're worried, and sometimes we make it happen. We create our fears and we create what we're afraid of. So it's wonderful actually just to let go of the fears and how you actually overcome that. You can start to, with your awareness and mindfulness, it's like the simile of a train. If you have a train, actually just today we saw the first train on the Southern Link railway line over in Armidale on the freeway. But when it was stopped, it wasn't going anywhere. And that was very symbolic. But anyhow, whenever a train is stopped, when it starts, it's very easy to put the brake on and stop it almost immediately. But when a train has picked up speed and it's hurtling along the tracks, and if it has to stop, sometimes it takes 500 meters, even a kilometer, to come to a halt. It's got far too much momentum. Same with your thought processes, or especially your emotional processes. Once they've picked up momentum and they're traveling very, very fast, it's just so hard to stop. But if you can catch yourself early on, it's so easy to stop these bad habits of the mind. So you may get angry at your partner. This is a bad habit. You know you love them, you're committed to them. But sometimes we say, not really nasty things, but no, not kind things to the people you love. Just bad habits, that's all. And if you can actually see that bad habit, you can actually catch yourself earlier and earlier and say, I'm not going to say that thing, I'm not going to do that thing. Or if it may be some other sort of habit which you have, you know, with getting angry when somebody sort of calls you names. And apparently already the monks who are on this walk at the moment, walking to raise funds for the retreat centre, they said even just they're thinking Monday jump somewhere, they got an Australian salute. Somebody mooned them. They took down their trousers and pointed their backside at them. So what would you do when that happens? Why get offended? Why? Did you get your camera out and take a shot for the newsletter? They went too fast in the car. Why do you get upset at these things? Well, it's obviously it's a stupid reaction to make because it doesn't sort of help anybody. Why not laugh? Because if somebody is trying to wind you up, if they're trying to offend you, all they're trying to do is to make your life a little bit more unhappy. They're trying to give you pain and suffering. And so if you actually see this whole process working with mindfulness, become more aware of your processes, you know, between your ears, I don't want to do this. Someone can call me a pig, they can call me an idiot, but I am not going to respond. You can actually catch yourself. If you start responding, then the train has left the station, it's very hard to stop afterwards. You get angry and upset. And that angry and upset, it hurts you, and it creates huge amounts of problems in society. If you can just ignore it, people don't do it again. Simply because the only reason they try and offend you is to get a rise out of you, get a reaction out of you. If you don't react, there's no point to it anymore. Which is a wonderful way of retraining someone. About 6 months ago here, I mentioned a great article which I read in a magazine about one lady who had done an article on one of these water parks where they were training dolphins. And they're training dolphins actually to jump through hoops. And she did an in-depth investigation on actually how do you train these animals to do these tricks, you know, like play water polo or something. And what she found out was basic psychology, and she thought, wow, this is so good, I can try this on my husband. And exactly the same tricks which were used to train dolphins, she tried on her husband, and she said it worked perfectly. And it was just basic mindfulness. whenever her husband did something stupid, she would completely ignore it. Instead of actually, you know, her husband sort of getting upset at her, instead of getting upset back, she stopped that whole negative process and just ignored him. Just the same when the dolphins did a mistake, they weren't punished, they weren't shouted, they just ignored them. So when somebody, you can train your wife as well, it works both ways, this is not just... whenever you're somebody who does something you don't like, the sort of behaviour you don't want to encourage, ignore it. Don't give them a response. And when they do something, when that dolphin jumps a little bit higher, a little bit closer to the hoop, then you give them a fish. So you have to get plenty of fishes to train your husband or your wife. Whatever it is, you know what I mean, like a little reward. Because the positive response is always far more effective, positive rewards. And you can actually see this happen, but to be able to give those positive rewards, you've got to be mindful enough and kind enough to make this wonderful Buddhist combination, not just mindfulness, but with kindness as well. Put those two together there. So you're aware and you're kind. When you have those two together, the kindness, the compassion and the mindfulness, then you see your husband doing something, you're kind to the guy, but you're already aware, but you're also kind to yourself and see what's happening inside your own head. And when you actually pay attention to that, you can see the stupid things which are not really kind at all. Not kind to yourself, not kind to other people. And those are the things which create the psychological, emotional and social problems in your family, in your world, and also in your body. Causing ill health and cancers and all sorts of stuff. Because the stress does not come from the body, it comes from the mind. Just the way we react in a dysfunctional way to the experiences of life. You don't have to do that. Instead, one is mindful enough to be kind and learn how to do something else. Mindfulness breaks habits because you're aware of what you're doing and you know you can do something else. See, awareness gives you alternatives. You don't always need to speak in the same way. You don't always need to react. You're not someone who has buttons. The reason we have buttons is an automatic response. I press that button and that's the response I get from you. That's why we call it buttons. Imagine if you unwire all your buttons. So when somebody calls you a pig, they call you an idiot, they call you stupid, they call you ugly, whatever they call you, you don't respond. You've unwired that button. It means they won't do that anymore. It's a waste of time. They don't get any response. Because of that, you are helping another human being. They've become a more compassionate, wise, civilized person. And you're also helping yourself as you see your own mental processes. You have processes like grief. And why do we do that? You can actually see the whole process happening inside of you. Or anger and disappointment. You can see the process as it occurs. And if you see it as it occurs, you can catch it earlier and earlier and earlier. And you can stop it. The kindness is, why get angry? What's the point of that? Is it really going to help me? Is it going to help the other person? Is it going to help society? And you find, I don't know who you're going to vote for in a couple of weeks' time, but some people are going to be upset. Some people are going to be happy. Who cares anyway? Instead of getting unhappy, you can't control these things, just leave it alone and just flow with it, whatever happens. You know what happens, you know, in your family, what happens sometimes that people are so afraid of making choices because they think, if this happens, then everything will go wrong. You don't have to be afraid of choices. If you put your mindfulness on the choices you make, it doesn't matter what choice you make, there's no such thing as a wrong choice. It's just a different choice, that's all. It's just you have different opportunities in the future. But I don't like the idea of like a wrong choice or a right choice. Whatever happens to you in life, you can always learn to live with it. See what happens. That's why I find it very easy to make choices. It's easy to make a choice in the monastery. Whatever happens, if you lay a brick the other way around, you can always sort of lay all the bricks that way around. Make it a different way of laying bricks. Whatever happens, you can always make something out of it. So that's, I can see the way that mind works. Sometimes we do something, we say something, we think something, and we always tend to blame and be negative. You can't see the whole process happening. It's a dysfunctional process. Once you can see it, out of compassion, out of wisdom, your own wisdom, you don't need to be taught this. You can see it happening, which means you could, as they say, regulate your emotional world. You can be a happier, wiser, peaceful person. Which is one of the reasons why, you know, we have things like religion. Sometimes, what do you have religion for? And it's there to serve people, to make people happier, better individuals. So you can come here and you can go home a better wife, a better husband, a better father, a better child, more sort of happy and more at ease with yourself. You can go to work and you don't get so stressed out. So you can be more long-lived and healthier. And there's heaps and heaps and heaps of studies that have actually shown the effects of this. And so this is actually what we really mean by the meditation for a better lifestyle. It's not that hard to do. It just needs time. And that's one of the reasons people think, oh, we've got no time. But these things are an investment in time. Whenever you were at school, you'd always have playtime in the morning. A recess in the afternoon if you went too late. And those gaps between your work periods were really important. Because no person's brain can just work continuously for all that time. Now I have my breaks. One of the things which I do for recreation is read comics. Calvin and Hobbes is one of my favourite. If I get a newspaper, that's usually the first section I turn to. You know, these are the comic strips. A little bit of recreation, actually to stop the mind. Or, if you really want to be still, just go and sit down cross-legged and make the mind really, really peaceful if you've got more time. What it actually does is stops you, energizes you, see what's going on, which means you can handle whatever happens in this world. Even going to Sydney last weekend, once again, my aircraft was delayed. And this is three times this year, flying with, I don't mind saying, Qantas. Three times this year the plane has been delayed. For 3 hours this time. The last time was 24 hours it was delayed. Yeah, the Telstra doesn't fly planes, otherwise they will be destroyed. I don't know much about Telstra. But anyway, even though these things are delayed, people can get really angry sometimes. You see people just jumping up and down, getting angrier and angrier and angrier. But as I've always noticed, this is three times this happened, never once when you get angry does it make the plane come faster. Well, I do notice it makes you sort of live shorter lives, you know, as you get sort of more and more upset. So when, here's a simple thing, why do people have dysfunctional reactions to some of the things which happens in life? Which is what happens in life. Sometimes things do not go according to your plan. So instead of having very, very solid and hard plans set in concrete, wouldn't it be wonderful just to be more adaptable? And how do we become more adaptable? By spending less time in the future and more time in the present. By being more aware and mindful. There's all sorts of different options which can happen. I remember this guy years ago, he came to see me, and the thing which changed his life and made him far more spiritual. He was in India. He was in Bombay at that time. Still Bombay, before it was changed to Mumbai. And he got in a taxi to take him to the airport. He was flying back to Europe on a plane. Taxi got lost. And his time was ticking away. He didn't know whether he was going to make his plane or not. In the end, he was just hoping there was a delay in the takeoff of the plane, because it was getting to the time of takeoff. And as he actually managed to find the airport, Bombay Airport, he actually saw his plane take off. And so he's cursing the driver. You know, he'd missed his plane. He left the city in plenty of time, but the stupid taxi driver got lost. And he was so upset. And then he saw the plane fall down and crash. I don't know, most people dead, I'd imagine. And then he was thanking the taxi driver, thank you so much. I remember telling that story, And that sort of changed his life because his expectations of what would happen, my plane has been delayed. Obviously that was an extreme, that's never happened to me, missing a plane. But you can see what happens, that sometimes when things so-called go wrong, it just makes another opportunity for you. So you don't get negative. You see the way the mind works. And you stop that sort of that dysfunctional way of looking at the mind. Or looking at life. You can actually use a different approach. The mindfulness sees a bigger picture. And by seeing a bigger picture and adding the compassion, that you can be kinder to life. You can be kinder to yourself. You can be kinder to your body. And kinder to the people you live with. I know sometimes we're just so, so negative to each other and to ourselves. We're always finding fault. That's one of the big things we stop with mindfulness. We stop the fault-finding mind. We just always see what's wrong in life. And that's actually the business mind. Because that's what we have to do in business. The idea of business is actually see the faults and manage it and fix it. We know we're all janitors of ourselves. Obviously we're janitors of our husband, of our wife as well. See the mistakes and fix them up. Instead of doing that, it's the other way, is using mindfulness actually to see what's right in the mind. It's one of the early experiences I had of living in the monastery down at Serpentine. I was the main builder there for many years. I've delegated that now to Ajahn Bamali. But whenever I was a builder and just managing the infrastructure of the monastery, I'd work so hard from Monday to Friday and on the weekends come up to here. It's so tiring. Whenever I go back after Sunday, you go walking around the monastery and you see all the things which were wrong, which need to be fixed up, the gutters which needed to be cleaned, you know, the bricks which needed to be stacked up properly, and all the paths which needed to be swept. And I realized I was just getting more and more tired. Simply because everything I'd ever do was to see the mistakes and start planning how I was going to fix them up. And that's why that one day I saw what I was doing, using a mindfulness, seeing the way my mind was working. I think that's not the way to spend a Monday morning. So from that time on, for many years afterwards, I'd go on a walk around my monastery Monday morning, looking for what was right, looking for what had been done, looking for what had been finished, was perfect and wonderful. And that's actually when I started appreciating my monastery in which I lived. All these other people, you know, like yourselves, would come down, oh, what a beautiful monastery you have. Are you joking? It's a mess. Because for me, I could see all the things which were wrong. And you guys would come up and say, oh, what a wonderful monastery, how peaceful it is. Peaceful, I have to work so hard in this monastery. And actually, I saw it wasn't you weren't wrong, it's me who was wrong. So I wasn't seeing the monastery in an objective way. I was seeing it as a manager sees things. A manager sees the faults and tries to fix them up. So I actually changed my attitude to sometimes when you are the manager, you put your manager mind on, because this is what you have to do, is find the faults. But I could take that manager hat off. And mindfulness could actually see my monastery, which I lived, in another way. And it's wonderful to be able to do that, because it is a beautiful monastery, living in the bush, in the hills, and we put a lot of effort and time into making that monastery look nice, and it does look nice, and I really appreciate it now, so it gives me more happiness to live in this place. What's your house like? Is it a mess? Do you always have to fix things up? How many of you can go home tomorrow and sit in your house and do absolutely nothing, and just enjoy, you know, your house, which you've paid a lot of money for, maybe not finished yet, but you know, you've paid a lot for this, and go in the garden or anywhere and just enjoy and do nothing. It's very hard for people to do that, because sometimes they feel guilty, I should be doing something. That's the manager again. Well, meditation says you don't need to feel guilty. You deserve time out. You deserve peace. You deserve just to relax. You deserve to stop and enjoy yourself. Instead of always feeling guilty enjoying yourself, or thinking you have to get everything out of the way first of all before you can enjoy yourself. One of the key stories in the book, Open the Door of Your Heart, it's a wonderful story to introduce here, This was a great monk in the south of Thailand, Ajahn Buddhadasa, building a hall in his monastery. As he was building this hall in his monastery, it came to the start of the rains retreat, where we do lots of meditation, or monks do study, and so he sent all the builders home. And said, you can come back in 3 months' time when we finished our retreat. So they all went away. And one day a man came to visit and they saw the hall and said quite innocently, when is your hall going to be finished? And the monk said, it is finished. And the guy said, what? There's cement bags on the floor. There's no glass in the windows. There's nothing on the roof yet. Are you going to leave it like this? It's some sort of Buddhist modern art. What do you mean it's finished? And the monk said, sir, what's done is finished. And he went away to meditate. There's a very powerful statement there. Because when is your house ever going to be all the jobs done so you can take a rest? When is your life going to be complete so you can take time out? When are you going to get everything out of the way so you can rest? The answer is, if you don't understand that simile, never. People work themselves to the grave. They become the richest people in the cemetery. The only place they can rest in peace is 6 feet under. Now, unless we understand just the way that we look at our mind and change the way that we look at our life, with a bit of mindfulness and compassion, we find that taking time out is actually an investment of time. You find by taking a bit of a break, you find you have more energy later on. And find you just have more clarity. You make better decisions. You become healthier, more positive. So much time is wasted in our life. Wasted in silly arguments. Wasted in, you know, some of the stuff we have to do with our health. And we waste so much time. If you can only spend a little bit of time resting from moment to moment, you know, do a little bit of meditation, a little bit of mindfulness, a little bit of still, a little bit of quiet time. If we can only invest even like 15 minutes every day doing this, we'd make up those 15 minutes very quickly in greater productivity. The sort of stuff which Mr. Costello would love to hear. More productivity, simply because we're using our brains more efficiently, because we know how to rest, because we know how to increase our mindfulness, to have more attention. How many of you have worked so late in front of your computer screen? Now your eyes are open, but your brain is closed. It's a waste of time. Instead, if you just rest a little bit, do a bit of meditation, and then when you sort of do your job, you find you're far more alert, more clear, and you are more happy. Which means your quality of life improves enormously. Which means that the anger, the problems which you have in the family decrease. The divorce rate will go down. Depression will vaporize. People's health will improve. And many other parts of our society, just the anger, the depression, the frustrations, but also tend to disappear. I think it was one of the great philosophers once said, the reason is Pascal, so all the problems of mankind and womankind too, all come from not knowing how to sit still. About 300 years ago he said that. And people weren't moving around that much or that fast in those days. It's amazing what happens when you just sit still and allow the mind to rest and get energy and clarity and mindfulness and add compassion. It's a huge what you can do for yourself and for the people who have to put up with you. So this is actually how we can use our mindfulness. And so I was talking all weekend, last weekend, about this. In seminars, in workshops, in lectures, and just how powerful it is. And that's one thing which we can give to the world. If you can learn how to be quiet, a little bit of meditation, a bit of mindfulness and compassion, you can help your kids and the people you live with. We can make a better world. And even if George Bush never comes to our retreat center, at least many of your friends can. And that way, we can create a better Western Australia. Thank you for listening. So, any questions about mindfulness, compassion, and its power? Certainly, I never mentioned the physical health benefits of that. If any of you ever got any sicknesses, pains, injuries, or just, you know, wounds from an operation, so powerful putting your mindfulness down and just sending some kind energy. Caring attention is very, very healing and powerful. Yes. Yeah. It's very good, yes, because your question was that you work in the mental health field and that many people know these truths, but you were struck by the fact that many of the people who were up telling other people about the importance of meditation said that they couldn't really do it much themselves. They weren't the best meditators. And again, I think one of the reasons is, know that much of their samples were actually done on new meditators. People off the street who hadn't done much meditation before. And usually when it's something new, you know, it's actually, there is a certain enjoyment of the novelty of it. And so usually when people start meditating, it's usually they have some good experiences for the first few times. Because they don't know what to do. And that's a plus when you start meditating. You don't know what to do means you don't do anything. Which means you get quite peaceful. The trouble is when you become a seasoned meditator, and where you think you know what you're doing and you try and control the whole process. And which is why that meditation doesn't work. The old simile, which I gave over there to these mostly Tibetan Buddhists over in Sydney who went to the conference. The glass of water, how can you hold a glass of water still? And those in the front row will see that it's still moving, it's still vibrating slightly. And so the usual response is to try and hold it more still, to concentrate more, use more willpower. The more willpower you use, just the more it shakes. And so people get frustrated after a while, they think they can't meditate, they can't keep their mind still. You're doing it the wrong way. It's very easy to keep a glass of water absolutely still. All you need to do is just put it down. You just put it down. First of all, when you put things down, it moves more. It shakes a bit more. Like when you first let go, and you don't do things, the mind actually gets more agitated. Your job is just to wait for a while. You just wait and rest. And that water now, those in the front row can see, that is far more still than I can ever hold it. And actually, that's how we meditate. You just got to get the trick, first of all. Once you get the trick right, of just letting things go, leaving things alone, you be the observer, not the doer. You don't meditate. You get out of the way and meditation happens. And with that stillness, that's when the mind starts to wake up and become very sharp and very alert. It rests. One of Ajahn Chah's, my teacher's sayings, to get a healthy body, you have to exercise it, move it. To get a strong mind, you have to keep it still. Still. So you don't do anything. All the doing agitates, stirs things up. You put it down and just watch. It becomes very still. But just like the simile of a lake, when it's still on the surface, it can reflect the forest around it, or the hills, or the sky. When there's waves on the surface, everything gets distorted. You don't see clearly. And the stillness is the pure reflection. So when the mind becomes still, the mindfulness becomes very sharp. You see very deeply. And eventually you start to see what you're up to. You think, oh, I'm stupid. What am I doing that for? Why am I getting angry at the woman I love? why am I saying these things to him? You just stop. Especially, why am I saying all these stupid things to myself? You're kinder, less judging, and more peaceful. You're a much saner person, much more effective in your work you do, able to do more, and do it better, and do it quicker. Said to someone just a few minutes ago, studying, if you learn how to meditate, you can get higher grades with less work and more time to party. It's a great marketing slogan for people at university and schools. And it works as well. It's true. Any other comments or questions? Okay, great. So, may you all be mindful, still, and kind. Not just mindfulness, stillness makes mindfulness. And with kindness as well, you've got the very powerful combination for life.
Arahant Sammā Sambuddho Bhagavā Buddhaṃ Bhagavantaṃ Abhivādhayami Suvākkhāto Bhagavatā Dhammo Dhammaṃ Namassāmi Supatipanno Bhagavato Sāvakasaṅgho Saṅkhaṃ Namāmi